¡Viva la raza!
I got that passion that's lasting long. Los mujeres fall in love with that Latin charm. One woman isn't enough, amigo. Siempre cogiendo más mujeres porque soy latino. And I'm tougher than tough, quality of your bluff, cause I lie, I cheat, I steal.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this week's edition of the Hashtag Miranda Show. I am your hashtag queen of soft style, the Twitterless heroine herself, Miranda Morales. I am very excited to be with all of you in spirit, not in person, because I'm by myself in a room. So that it's a crowded. Maybe I can fit all of my listeners into a room. I'm not too sure. I haven't looked up those analytics yet. But maybe, who knows? Maybe a really big room. I'd like to think that, but yeah, we're together in spirit. We're together in spirit. I am pretty excited about this week's topic. It's actually a play off of something that happened during SummerSlam this weekend, and leading into kind of just overall big theme in professional wrestling. But before we get to that, as a reminder that the Hashtag Miranda Show is part of the Chairshot Radio Network. Don't forget
Chairshot.com. Always use your head.
Yes, always use your head. The Chairshot Radio Network has a lot of fantastic podcasts for you to listen, and you can visit thechairshot.com for all of your wrestling news, analysis, and opinions. I don't do this show alone. I do it with my co-host, the lovely, talented, that guy. Greg.
That guy.
Hey, that was nicer than what some of the things you got on Twitter.
Yeah, that's true. There was usually a word between that and guy that began with an F and with an ucking on Twitter. Yeah, that was good. But what do I care? I don't care what they think. And here's why. Wow. Go to hell, Twitter.
That's why I am not on Twitter. I don't need that stress in my life of, you know, fighting.
To the point, I don't want you to have to go like I'm like, just stay away from it. You don't need it. It doesn't, you'd get crap by default because of me. Like, you just don't.
Yeah, guilty by association.
Your life is fine. You don't need it.
It's a hard thing to move around and navigate as a wrestling fan, as a ring announcer. That's how you get your name out there. That's how you learn about wrestling news. But you got to take, you know, the good with the bad, apparently. And so I don't think I'm quite ready for that level yet. Who knows? Maybe one day it may happen. But I haven't needed it yet, and I've been fine without it. But Greg, since we're talking so much about your Twitter, why don't you let our lovely listeners know where they can find you so they can, you know, say things to you?
So if you're looking for a Twitter account where you can talk to me and have fun and interact and someone you'll like, just head on over to WRESTLNGREALIST. There's no I on wrestling, but there is one in Realist. If you want a Twitter account where, of course, you'll get a lot of Funko Pops and University of Illinois stuff too at that one. If you want a wrestling account that will tell you how it is, that doesn't hold back, that you will love and hate both at the same time, then you can follow me at ChairShotGreg and probably hate me within about a week.
Yes. You can also follow the ChairShot at ChairShot.com.
The ChairShot.com.
On Twitter.
The Ohio State University. The University of Arizona? Is that a thing?
Yeah. No, it's a thing. It's like a legit thing, Greg. Legit. You're such a Phoenix, Mark. I can't even. How am I supposed to do this show?
All right, barely. So next week.
Barely. That's how I do this show. Now, this week's topic, I really want to get into it because this kind of was an epiphany for me this week. So many of you probably saw SummerSlam, and one of the biggest pops that came from SummerSlam, one of the positive things that came out of it that pretty, I think, universally fans agreed on was this relaunch of Bray Wyatt. So he faced Finn Balor in a match. It was the second to last match on the card, which is a pretty big deal to be right before the main event. First off, Finn Balor looking angelic. Look, if I'm going to spend some time talking about Bray Wyatt, we got to, you know, do a little bit of praise of Finn Balor. That white
sure does cover up those beautiful abs of yours. I'll make you a deal. You show me your abs, and I'll show you my...
Ooh! Oh, go away, Leo! Go away!
Aw, Puddin'.
Yeah, those white trunks, white jacket. I mean, it did play well off of the really dark character that is Bray Wyatt, but, I mean, just, you know...
Probably intentional.
Yes, you know, as we like to say sometimes, that's really chingon. Like, that's, like, legit. That's really some nice shit. Chingon.
What does that mean?
The Spanish. That was just, like, really fucking cool.
That's a literal, like, that is that the, like, literal translation?
No, I mean, that's not really the literal translation. It's you know, a slang word, but...
Okay.
That's how it's used to describe.
Say one thing about that match, since we're not really here to talk about the match. We're here to talk about... No. What you'll say in a minute, but I was a little disappointed about one thing in the match, and that's the fact that, like, Bray got up, Finn got up afterwards and was kind of fine. And if you're going to write him out for a couple months to give him his vacation or whatever, I felt like he should have been stretchered out or, you know, like, taken out to really put over the new Bray Wyatt character
and
the Mandible Claw.
Yeah, I mean, I think his facial expressions put out that he was more, like, mortified or scared or shocked, but I see what you mean more physically. But he went out, but, you know, well, it was a pin via Mandible Claw, so that too was, I wish he would have just, like, straight up passed out, and maybe that's where the whole stretcher thing could have happened. But you did see, I think, Finn's facial expressions throughout the match were really good. It really did help play that he, you know, wasn't prepared for this. And Corey Graves made a point about it during right before the match. And I think a lot of fans in the perfect world also thought about this, that this is a whole new Bray Wyatt. So why didn't Finn come out with the demon? But logistically, we knew that Bray was going to win this. He needed to win this. So there's no point of almost sacrificing the demon to him quite yet. Maybe down the line.
At least not yet.
Or maybe that's where, you know, Finn's redemption comes in. But I think just talking about the costume choice for Finn, that kind of light style compared to Bray's really heavy darkness that came to it was great. Really, really good. But going into this week's topic, so a lot of people were just enamored with this transformation of Bray Wyatt, starting with the Firefly Funhouse series that's been happening over the past few months, being able to see Bray as this creepy kind of Mr. Rogers type of character, but also allowing that to introduce the Fiend as a character. And then the past few weeks, we've seen the Fiend come out and attack people and, you know, really get to an introduction to the Fiend as its own identity separate than Bray Wyatt, which was something I think a lot of people were curious about. You know, was he going to come out as Bray Wyatt and then transform into the Fiend? What was this all about? So his entrance during SummerSlam started off with all of the lights flickering on and or going off, just like we've seen the past few weeks. But then you hear the music, and it's a new music, but it's also just like a revamped version of his prior music, but more of just a metalcore version. And then you see the lantern. And I was curious about this because I was a fan of the old lantern and how that got incorporated into a new prop. For those of you who didn't see, just Google it. Just Google it. Bray Wyatt head lantern. And I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this, then you must have seen it. But it is the lantern, but instead of just the lantern, it is a plastic, God knows it's hopefully plastic, version of Bray, the old Bray Wyatt's head with the dreads, eyes sewn shut and mouth wide open. Super, you can't see my hands, but super wide. Open, and the light coming out of a dead Bray Wyatt's head, that's the best way to describe it. Very almost like Walking Dead type of style. Like, he's not zombified, but he's definitely dead. Carrying his head lantern to the ring, still wearing the mask, and that's a feature that he incorporated into his match, that he wears the mask during his match. And it's just a new Bray Wyatt, a transformation. And so that really got me thinking, what are some of the best wrestling transformations? Because a transformation in character and style can really add life to a person. Maybe someone that maybe was stagnant, that wasn't seeing a lot of opportunity, that wasn't in, you know, a lot of storylines, or for whatever reason, you know, wasn't getting a lot of attention, but then this transformation happens and it changes everything. And I think that this is what's going to happen for Bray Wyatt. I mean, fans are already in love with the new persona, the new tweaks to his character. And it could have definitely saved his career, not necessarily to be so dramatic, but before that, he was with the Eater of Worlds with Matt Hardy. The Wyatt family was pretty popular, but at the same time, they were booked terribly. They have this fresh slate with Bray Wyatt. He won his match first off, which is already a big accomplishment in it. But I'm also curious, Greg, what are your thoughts on this Bray Wyatt transformation?
I'm excited by the Bray Wyatt transformation. I'm concerned because the reason everyone loves it is because it's so different. It's different than anything the WWE has done. The original Bray Wyatt character was different than anything WWE has done. And I fear that it's so different, they don't really know what to do with it. And my concern is that it's going to be the same problem. Now, if he's on Raw, which is where we've seen most of his appearances, and Paul Heyman's involved, I know Bruce Pritchard had a lot to do with the Firefly Funhouse segment, so maybe there's some different hands in this, and it has a better chance of succeeding long term. It's got money written all over it. It's also got a lot of risk written all over it for WWE in terms of being a family product, catering to kids. Everything that they do, it kind of goes against that. And so, like the lantern you talked about, we may not see that again, which would really suck because it was such
that
an amazing
sucks, because I love it. I want one in my kitchen hanging as a chandelier.
That's okay.
I dig it.
Only in Tucson. But no, I mean, just such a good character. And the problem is you got to let him win a lot. You got to let him be dominant. They're not good at that. So there's just a lot of things. It's just different than anything they do. And so was announcing that Dean Ambrose was leaving before he left. So was almost everything that's happened in 2019. So 2019 has been the most different year for so many. I mean, Seth Rollins just beat Brock Lesnar clean after beating him at WrestleMania and having Brock Lesnar cash in like a briefcase. Like, none of that is anything we ever would have imagined would have happened. So the sky's the limit, I think, for him, and hopefully he gets the opportunity to do it. The visuals, I love the nightmares it probably gave children. Like, that's what wrestling, a wrestling character can be that, and I hope it is that for their sake and for his sake. I'm intrigued, but for me, and you guys talked about this during the last show, I look at the business differently, and I look at wrestling in terms of how people are going to be used and what they can do. And so for me, I'm just so interested to see if they pull it off. And if he can pull it off, and I really hope he can, because they got something special.
Yes. Well, and even the longevity of it, Corey also mentioned at the end that this could be, you know, and he was careful as far as the comparison, but I know people were already making it on this Undertaker level mystique. And that's been, you know, pretty well maintained for 30 years, but that's because it went through evolution. It went through changes. The Undertaker that started in the 90s definitely is not the Undertaker that we know now. And even just the transformation went through in the Attitude Era to kind of a darker Taker to then American Badass, you know, it had to evolve, but they did the best to keep the mystique. And that's a testament to how good it can be. But you're right, too. By keeping the mystique, then that means it's a lot of work involved into it. And maybe one day they decide they don't want to put the work into it anymore. And not Bray. I think Bray is fully committed to this, and you can see it in everything that he does. And so I don't think his commitment will wane. It's going to be the company's commitment. And it could take anything, one advertiser, one bad incident. You know, their commitment could be easily swayed. So live in the present, wrestling fans. That's sometimes what we just have to do. Enjoy what we have now with Bray Wyatt, because we don't know what it's going to be like a month from now, six yeah. months from now, a year from now. But going into this week's topic of transformations, it really got me thinking, you know, speaking about the past and the future, who really benefited from transformations? And some of these were very intentional, and some were just kind of natural evolutions of people. And it was actually interesting that this idea came up, because about maybe a week ago, I was talking to someone about Stone Cold Steve Austin. And to me, he has the biggest transformation probably of all time, as far as from his early wrestling days. But if you don't know that, if you only know Stone Cold. Most people just know Stone Cold. They don't know anything that he did previously as Stunning Steve Austin. And so I pulled up a picture of him and Stone Cold, Stunning Steve Austin, and Brian Pillman when they were part of the Hollywood Blondes. And someone the person I was showing it to looked at it, and they were stunned. They said, that's not him. What do you mean? You know, that guy has hair. That guy's smiling. You know, that's not Stone Cold. It's like, yes, that's Stone Cold. And so to think about that transformation from when he was Stunning Steve Austin in the Hollywood Blondes, even when he was part of I also pulled up a picture of the Dangerous Alliance. And man, the 90s are a crazy time. But I love it. I love it. I love the Dangerous Alliance. I think it's, and it was such an underrated, not to go into a whole other rant, underrated faction. You know, that's just hashtag facts. Just to see the difference in those pictures compared to what we see in Stone Cold and what he had to do to get to it. A lot of us know the stories about, you know, just getting the name Stone Cold was just kind of out of, just coincidence. You know, the company had all these other random ass names for him to go by, and luckily Stone Cold was one that everyone agreed on, and it stuck forever. So I, you know, that transformation of someone who, I even think too about their old Hollywood Blondes entrance when they used to come in with the old, like, pretending that they were filming. Like, how the hell did they think that was ever going to catch on? I don't know. But now, you know, from that Steve Austin to what we know now and the legacy of Stone Cold, one of, if not the biggest wrestling transformation out there.
And, you know, the Austin one is so funny, too, because he, I mean, like, you talk about the Dangerous Alliance. Like, he was wearing a Ric Flair robe. Like he was just there's so many crazy things that were there, and he's one that jumped out at me. One that to kind of really the same trajectory in terms of how they went. Triple H, when he was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, he was first this blue blood John Paul Levesque in WCW. He was part of a tag team called the Blue Bloods at one point. I think he teamed with William Regal, or maybe Dave Taylor. I can't remember. Comes to WWE as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the Greenwich Snob, and eventually becomes, his name just becomes three letter H's, just HHH. And that always, we joked about it before, and Patrick and I have talked about it. When Shawn Michaels started calling him Triple H, it was just always three H's, and he was still Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And then at some point, he walks out, and the graphic on the screen says the word triple and the letter H. And I remember because we were message board guys back then, and I literally started a whole thread on the message board, and the title of the thread was the word triple and the letter H. And it just jumped out at me that all of a sudden his name was the word triple and the letter H. And I bet you could look at how he was booked and see a change from when he became the word triple and the letter H. And now he's the most popular executive in the company, and he's running NXT, and he's just, but he completely reinvented himself. Even when he was in DX, and DX was all about, dick jokes and all the stupidity, and then when Shawn Michaels got hurt and left, Triple H took a more serious tone and had this amazing feud with The Rock that they had their ladder match at SummerSlam, and really became the Triple H that we knew of that is now, I think he's a 10-time world champion or something like that. I don't even know the number. Maybe 12. And
it's up there.
It's up. I think it's 10. I think Orton had more. I think they talked about that on SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And now he's, flying in private planes and making deals and opening up NXTs all over the world, running the Performance Center, and he's everything. And he's everything that wrestling fans love, and they want him to be the guy to take over for Vince. It's just crazy the transformation that he went through. So Triple H was one of the first ones that really jumped out at me.
I think on the same caliber of Stone Cold as far as really dramatic ones, and this is kind of a tandem pair, though, when I thought about it afterwards. And one transformation was more dramatic than the other, but they worked together because of their stories. One was Hulk Hogan to Hollywood Hogan. And as far as gear wise, there, still wore kind of the same things, just black and white. Just changed the color. But the attitude, the perception, this person that many people grew up with idolizing, who a lot of kids felt like was a superhero before they even knew what a superhero was, to change into this egotistical, really just selfish character. And in some ways, at least from what, people within the business believed, a truer perception of what this individual was or who they were really. That was really big, because that was the best example of taking a face and changing them so dramatically to a heel that people just were in shock and awe, thinking, going back to Bash at the Beach, when that, and that maybe wasn't, that was just more of the significance of the attachment of the NWO. But then shortly after, seeing the yellow and red going away and now having the black and white, even that just subtle change made people really realize that this was not the Hogan that they grew up with. And changing, in his promos and changing the way that he spoke. I mean, still lots of brothers, but, just in a more selfish way. I think that was really one of the biggest transformations, because nobody thought that Hulk would ever go heel. No one. And I think, at one point he didn't. He was still very unsure of it. It was a really, really big gamble, but it added years to his career. It really did, in ways that now people say that Cena should do it, because Hulk is the archetype for changing from a heel to, or a face to a heel, and being able to add years to your career. So, in that same note, an even bigger physical transformation was Sting, from Surfer Sting to Crow. Physically, you couldn't even I didn't even realize they were the same person. And I came in to wrestling before I really knew Surfer Sting was. So it wasn't until later on when I realized that he used to look so different. But everything about his look, and even just the persona that he adopted as this very quiet vigilante, you know, who was a lurker, who, you know, you weren't sure what he was doing. But the fact that WCW was able to keep that the way that they did for so long was a miracle in wrestling terms. But the physical transformation Sting had, same thing. I mean, not only added to his career, but I think the Hogan Sting feud would have not been what it was if those roles hadn't been established. If those transformations hadn't had happened. So two big ones that come to mind are those two guys.
Yeah, the Hogan one is interesting because he didn't want to turn. Bischoff pitched it to him before the NWO, and it wasn't until he saw the energy behind Hall and Nash that he was like, okay, I want to be this guy, brother. And Vince and Bruce Pritchard wanted him to turn around WrestleMania 9 and or WrestleMania 8. When he was supposed to wrestle Sid, and he wouldn't do it then either. So it really took him seeing the money to do it. For me, you know, one that I know you love and one that you probably had on your list just happened this past year. You know, we just hit SummerSlam, and the whole thing really kicked off at SummerSlam, you know, when Becky Lynch started her transformation. And it wasn't until you know, right around the whole Facebreaker incident when she became the man. And literally, it was just her. She changed her name on Twitter to The Man. That's how the whole thing started. Like, it started her when she changed her, not her handle, just her name or display name on Twitter to The Man. And now, like, that's her entrance video is The Man. And she's got shirts that say The Man. And Seth Rollins, Springtime, had a shirt that said The Man's Man.
Man's Man, like, yeah. I mean,
it's, when and,
you're
and
dating
it's all
The Man, like, that's.
And talk about it. I mean, if you look at her before and the whole Daft Punk setup that she had with the goggles and the smoke and everything, like, she obviously probably didn't like it because look at her now, but it's, you know, she took hold of her character and got hurt at the right time, and next thing you know, started talking trash on social media, and now you have the second biggest star in the company.
Yeah, well, and even taking it back to her NXT days when she had the bright green river dancing gimmick, I mean, that too is, I mean, even further away to have those two in the same room, you wouldn't think they were the same person at all. And I, you know, they say that some of the best characters are just an extension of who you are. And I truly think that that's what has made Becky so successful. This is an extension of who she is, and she's been able to roll with it. And as a woman, I think that's especially challenging because you also not only have to be talented, but you have to be beautiful. You have to be sexy. You have to be athletic. You have to be all of these things. And I think Becky just chucked the playbook and said, F that, I'm just going to be me. And I'm going to let fans just see what they get what they see. And fans have loved that because they get exactly, you know, who they want. And to even say that there was ever going to be a wrestler female that people would equate to Stone Cold a year ago, we'd say that's insane. Who would do that? It would be too gimmicky, but it came very organically for Becky. And that's also something when you have a transformation that is also organic, the fans are going to be behind it. The fans are really going to support it, and it's going to last. So yeah, that's a crazy transformation. Looking back from all the way in the NXT days. Kind of on a similar note, one that I put, and almost like an honorable mention, because it's when you look at it, maybe it's not a huge transformation, but it is one that has an impact on this wrestler's career and their persona, and that's Charlotte. Because in the beginning, she was not Charlotte Flair. She was Charlotte. And there was a bit of a disassociation between Charlotte, the wrestler, and her family. And I know some of that was because she wanted it. She didn't want it to be perceived that she got anything because of who her father was. So in her early NXT days, I mean, there was that association, but you know, really, that didn't come on until later on where she added the Charlotte or the Charlotte Flair was added. She didn't always come out in robes. Now she does. I mean, she really is this persona, this extension almost of her father. And that, I think, you know, maybe some people would have thought that it was a bad idea to do that. And I can see, you know, maybe the hesitation because wanting to establish your own character. But I think she's gotten the best of both worlds. She's gotten to establish who she is as an athlete, as a woman, as a wrestler, but also being able to rely. I mean, your dad is Ric Flair. I mean, he is the dirtiest player in the game, the best out there. How can you not? But putting it into her own in just the way that she styles her robes and you know, the figure eight, which is it making a comeback now? I don't know. I feel like after Sunday, like the figure eight is now coming in style. I haven't seen that in a while, but it's being used a lot more frequently. And even, you know, that's, she had the figure eight, but also used natural selection a lot more in the beginning. Now she's really just staying true to that figure four. So the seeing Charlotte add more of the flair, I guess literally, to her has been an interesting transformation.
Yeah, to me, it's and I didn't even think to put her on my list, but to me, you're Ric Flair's daughter. Go be Ric Flair's daughter. Like, that's, she was probably, they were probably all wooing at barbecues together. Like, this is, and so go do that. And she did. And when she embraced it, I mean, her career has taken off. And she's still got her own spin on it. And she's still her own individual, despite being Ric Flair's daughter. She doesn't really wrestle like him, you know. In fact, she was wrestling like you talk about NXT. When she won the NXT Women's Championship, she was doing the stupid strut. And of course, Ric Flair was there, and Bret Hart was there with Natalya and all that. But, yeah, she's become the biggest, one of the biggest female stars in the world. And it's worked. You know, probably the number two or number three female star in the company. Probably number two behind Becky. But yeah, the whole transformation has worked, and she's, you know, may go down as the best ever. And that's, had she not embraced being Ric Flair's daughter, I don't know that would have happened one bit. For me, one that really jumped out, you kind of talked about the transformation of Stone Cold, and I thought you were going to this guy when you talked about the parallels, but his greatest rival was The Rock. And when The Rock made his debut, he was, you know, the pineapple-haired blue chipper, Rocky Maivia. And even when he became The Rock, they would still refer to him as Rocky Maivia. It's been at least 10 years since the name Rocky Maivia has been uttered on television. Probably more than that. Probably 15 years. Because they, you know, now he's Dwayne Johnson. He's a movie star. He's The Rock. But, I mean, when he, kind of the same thing almost as, you know, some others, he got booed. When, you know, people literally started chanting, "Die, Rocky, die."
And then
he got hurt, and he comes back. And I remember he just cuts a promo, and he's like, "You don't talk about The Rock like that." And heads turned because you didn't know he could do that. And you had no idea, because when he left for the injury, he wasn't that guy. And he came back, and then at that point, it was literally, you always hear, you know, the phrase, you know, the irresistible force, the immovable object. And that's a great cliche to use to sell a wrestling match. There has never been an irresistible force like The Rock in pro wrestling. And there was just, once he started cutting promos, it was undeniable. It truly was. Like everything he uses, every catchphrase about him is true. The electricity, the way he is with the people, probably even the whole eating pie bit. It's probably all really true. And yeah, there he is. And
I'm, now not, he's, I'm not about to call The Rock a liar, so.
No, you can't. No untrue words would ever cross his mouth. He's the biggest, he's not the biggest wrestler. He's pretty much the biggest star in the world, like the biggest entertainment star in the world. All because he started cutting promos in third person. Like, had that not happened, we may not have Hobbs and Shaw. Like, that's that crazy. Just to think about, you know, the whole butterfly effect of him getting hurt, going away and becoming The Rock, like, helped, you know, he and Stone Cold Steve Austin transform the business, and of course Vince McMahon as well. But yeah, like with becoming The Rock, I mean, that's, you know, just something that, that's a transformation unlike any other. Like, if you go back and look at his debut with the purple tights and the white knee pads and the hair, and he's a blue chipper and smiling and all happy, like, he wasn't The Rock at all. Yeah. Like just a huge transformation. And now he's, again, the biggest personality in the entire world.
You talked about, and we talked the past, you know, a few wrestlers about kind of the family lineage. I'm going to steal one from your list. The evolution of Cody Rhodes, because that has been in and out, you know, bobbing and weaving almost. And talking about changing wrestling landscape, you know, I know that AEW still has, you know, a lot to prove, but I think that because of Cody Rhodes' journey, that has already impacted, you know, what his vision for AEW is going to be. I mean, starting off just as Cody Rhodes, being paired with Randy, and DiBiase. Forgot his first name. Sorry, y'all, it's late.
Ted.
But Ted DiBiase.
Teddy Jr.
Starting off with them and, you know, still having a fairly successful run. But then, you know, even when I still love that the ravishing Cody Rhodes, I mean, even the little tweaks that he did to his character were really smart and little things that you can, you know, get into, but not necessarily dramatic as, you know, what we would see later on as this rebranding as Stardust. And to his credit, I mean, it was silly, but he made it work. He definitely went out of this box, of this universe, and oddly enough, who would have thought that, you know, you'd think that he would be stuck with more of a Rhodes gimmick than a Goldust gimmick. Right. But, you know, that's also a testament to Goldust, who has one of the most successful gimmicks in wrestling. Period. You know, to have that character go for as long as it did, and that person, you know, he went through his own transformations with Goldust. Some I don't understand. I mean, I was 10 at the time when he went through some of that transformation with Luna, and he was in the ball and gag.
Wore a diaper at one point,
yeah. Yeah, wore a diaper. I wasn't really quite sure what was happening, but I was 10. I turned out fine, though, so, you know, don't worry about it, anybody. I turned out okay. But going back to Cody, him having to go through that, I can't imagine what it's like to have to make something like that work. And also when you're just trying, I mean, yeah, he did. He made
he
it.
He was just
made
as
it work,
good
but,
at Stardust as Goldust was at Goldust. Like, he just hated it. Like, he could have been huge as Stardust if he wanted to be.
But also, there's a ceiling with that. Like, let's be real. Goldust as a character is great, but Goldust, he had a glass ceiling. You know, he wasn't going to be this wrestler that was going to headline WrestleMania. And I understand that, you know, that's really a select few. But when you want to be taken seriously and even have serious feuds and go for titles, you're going to hit a ceiling. And it was very obvious that he was going to hit that ceiling. And he wanted more with his character. He wanted more with his career. And then he left WWE and became the nightmare and became the antithesis of things that he just despised, not only in WWE, but almost a little bit with his family legacy, that he wanted to be someone new. He wanted to play off of the family legacy in a very different way. And that, you know, helped him join the Bullet Club, that helped, you know, launch AEW, and the rest, as we know currently, is history. So, I mean, also seeing that this transformation had an impact beyond just the wrestler, it had an impact on their decisions. It had an impact on how they perceived wrestling and ultimately their decision to start a new company. That's huge. But that's also, I think those decisions that he's made in his character throughout time also shows that he has the ability to do that not only for himself, but hopefully for other wrestlers. And he can use that knowledge and share that with other wrestlers and with others in AEW so that AEW can have successful transformations. I, you know, talking about the future, I hope a year from now, we're talking about AEW wrestlers that had a transformation. You know, Sean Spears could easily be someone that we're talking about a year from now, going from this guy who just said 10 to a really dominant heel. By the way, that 10 chant was happening in Toronto like
it was.
You know, nobody else. So
it sure was.
That's your fault, WWE. I don't feel sorry for you. You blame yourself for that. Like, congratulations, you have another chant that you're stuck with for, you know, ever.
They're going to do it at AEW, too. Like, they're going to do it,
oh yeah,
you know, everywhere. True. And yeah, they're going to do it in Boston when he faces Jon Moxley, and they're going to do it probably in Chicago at All Out, yeah. And I love the 10 gimmicks, so I'm not that mad about it, but
no,
it's annoying.
I don't mind. It's annoying, and I love it. Have you met me? Do you know me? That's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
Love knowing things. But yeah, I hope a year from now we're talking about AEW wrestlers going through transformations. And I do think that part of that may be, you know, because of Cody's influence and just his ability to really assess characters and the landscape of wrestling. So I love
my favorite Cody Rhodes was still like the beautiful disaster, like when he went from dashing Cody to face mask wearing Cody and was handing out the paper bags. Like, that was a great Cody and cutting those promos, and he still uses that same voice now when he cuts promos. I loved that Cody Rhodes and really wanted to see that Cody go to the top. I only got one left. I got two left on the list, but I think
let's save the big one for last.
Going Johnny Nitro just seems stupid at this point, but going from Johnny Nitro to John Morrison and now Johnny Impact and Johnny Mundo and Johnny Dunkin' Donuts and Johnny wherever he goes.
Johnny Lucha. I mean, in some ways, too, like, I feel like the person, like, there hasn't been very much change in a way to the...
He's still John Morrison.
He's still John Morrison and the kind of the look and the style. But the fact that he could just change his last name, I mean, that's a chameleon. Yeah. And I can appreciate that adaptability.
But when he went from Johnny Nitro to John Morrison, that was huge. And the one thing about him that really jumps out, he was ECW champion when he did that. Like, he was Johnny Nitro when he won the ECW title. Like, 2 weeks later, he's John Morrison all of a sudden. And as a champion, changes his character and gimmick, which no one ever does. And I don't think anyone's ever done since. So, to me, that's the one that's why he jumped out. And I put him on the list so quickly because of when he did it and how much of a change it was. Now, that stuck, and that's like, you know, what, 12, 13 years ago that he did that. And here we are still today talking about Johnny Nitro, Morrison, Mundo. And he's... You know, that's going to be his thing. That's his legacy in the business. And that's fine. He's done well with it. But, yeah that pales in comparison to the big one.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because we both had this on our list. It's last. But also, when you think about the biggest, the most, the transformations that stuck and the transformations that are still happening now, you got to think Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho his transformations will outlive us all. It's gonna outlive, you know, the apocalypse, just because they happen. They're still happening, and that's a rare thing now to have wrestlers who have been in the business for so long and they're still transforming. And every transformation has elements of success that have elements of who this person is. And we talked about, you know, how some of the best personas are an extension of who you are. And I believe in every sense, all of the transformations of Chris Jericho are in some way an element of him, or an extension of him in some way, shape, or form. And starting off, I mean, with Lionheart, and that was really my first exposure to him when I was a kid. And then even transforming that in a subtle way from Lionheart to Crybaby Chris Jericho. I love that. Like, Crybaby Chris Jericho is still one of my favorites. And then taking that going into the WWE and still having elements of Lionheart. He just wore, you know, shinier shirts and had funny goatees and those little nuances that he did with his look and his character. He came out too as a heel, but less crybaby and just, you know, kind of more neurotic, but still funny. You know, all these elements of his character as the years went on were all subtle changes until there was the big changes, like when he came back after injury, and I call it the Nick Bockwinkel transformation, correct? Because I remember the influence. Yeah. So I know all his transformations have proper terms. I just don't remember them all. So I apologize.
I love the suit wearing best suit in the world wearing, at what I do, Chris Jericho, the one that feuded with Shawn Michaels.
Best in the world.
Yes, best in the world at what I do. And that's
best in the world at what I do.
So good. And that's actually my favorite Chris Jericho, believe it or not. Like, he just, it was so different and was just such a departure. Of course, now he's, you know, the rock star and probably his true form, honestly, is the character that he's playing now. And it's Yeah, he's the master at reinvention. Like, he really is. Like you call it transformation, but reinvention, like, you know, it's so cliche, but you look up reinvention in the dictionary, you should see Chris Jericho. Like, he's
You
done it
do.
so many times, and he's probably got one left in him. Like, the whole list of Jericho character, like, that was
Yes.
fantastic.
The list.
It was like
And I think it's
the only lasting impression Jimmy Jacobs left on WWE was the list of Jericho. And it's just so brilliant and paid off so well with the Kevin Owens story. Jericho is golden and is, you know, everyone likes to call him the GOAT because he's a favorite of the internet that made it. He's not the GOAT, but, you know, I mean, eventually he's got to be like top 10 category, and that's, you know, that's a lot for a dude who's like probably in real life 5'8", 5'9", and not all that
Yeah.
big, and you know, made it to the levels and heights that he ascended to from being a cruiserweight in WCW. So that's, yeah, the transformations, he's brilliant, pure brilliance. And
Yes.
so many of these transformations, almost all of them, the individual, you know, had everything to do with. Even, you know, probably the one where the individual had the least to do with it was Hogan, which is interesting. Like I think a lot of that was Eric Bischoff and probably Kevin Nash and Scott Hall influence, and I don't know that Hogan came up with a lot of the ideas about how to dress the character and do that. Everyone else seemed to be characters they wanted to play, and Jericho is just, you know, just amazing with the changes that he made and the things that he did. Just pure brilliance. It's the only word I can think
Yeah.
of. It's brilliance.
Yeah, no, and I think sometimes evaluating your character can be scary and doing things different, but to him it just seems like it's natural, like it's just something that happens, and that's attested, you know, a big element to his longevity, that why he's still wrestling now. He evolves, and that's, I mean, kind of a pun too about him surviving the apocalypse as far as his evolutions, but I also think it's because he knows you adapt or you die. And I think that's where there's been frustration with WWE on other characters, say like a John Cena, who literally the only thing that changes is the color of his shirt. And you want something different, and he's been able to do that in ways that we don't expect, in ways that we don't even know that we need or would like. And that's a, you know, that's a, it's a big thing for fans that I think that they really appreciate. But also as a wrestler, to think, you know, what am I going to change into now? And how does that even change like his move set? I know I wasn't going to get too deep into it just because that's not my forte, but even now in this new iteration, and also probably because he's in a new company, has a, you know, a new finishing maneuver. But I think that that has been something that he's also been very good at, is that when he does change his persona, he also changes, you know, his move set a little bit. And going back to the best in the world at what I do, one of my favorite pay-per-view posters of all time, I think it was Armageddon, when he's on the desk and he's ready to push the button type of picture. I forget
Yep.
which year it was, but that's one of my favorite pay-per-view posters. And it's so subtle, but also in that character, and he's in the suit, and you know, he was definitely just a really good heel in that element. That was a really perfect pay-per-view poster for him. So yeah, I mean, I'm gonna declare it kind of the king of the transformation is Chris Jericho, and we're gonna continue to see it. I'm excited to see what's next. Not sure if it's gonna involve a lot of face paint, you know, who knows? That kind of threw me, but you know, I'm not gonna hate on it. I appreciate that he's trying.
Oh yeah, he's amazing, and it just, you can't ever, you know, count Chris Jericho out because of what he's doing, and like you said, he's trying and everything that he's been about. So yeah, it's you just never know what. I think he's got one more in him, to be honest with you. Like, I think
Yeah.
he's got one more reinvention in him before you know, he's done, and who knows what that is. Like, I never would have imagined, you know, the way that he took it now, and so with
Yeah.
it really came
Yeah,
from
if
the
you would have
Japan run. So I
Yeah,
can't even predict
you never know.
what he might do next.
And
It could be something totally
that's the
different.
cool thing about it. You just don't know with him, and it could be something really big. It could be something subtle, like even just like the list, you know, was something that was just so little that, you know, that really took off. So I, Yeah, I completely agree. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but I'll be excited to see it. I mean, that is going to be one of the reasons why I tune into AEW and follow, is to see what Chris Jericho is doing and how he changes.
I mean, he's going to be their first world champion, so it'll be fun to see. That'll be a lot of fun to see. So,
yeah. Well, that is it for this week's edition of the Hashtag Miranda Show. Pretty concise, I have to admit. I wasn't quite sure where this topic was going. I joked with Greg I was going to kind of wing it. Not true. I did have to write things down, because this is a hard thing when you're really thinking about retrospectively, you know, a theme. You want to make sure you have, you know, your thoughts in order. But like I said, this really struck me just seeing what Bray Wyatt did this week. And what's to come. I mean, we talked about our hopes and reservations with this, but also we've had some great history of showing transformations are good things. But also, we don't always know where the transformations are going to lie in the history books until later on. So, very interested in seeing what happens with Bray. You know, Sasha Banks transformed her hair, so that's like another big one. That's a thing. Blue hair, who this, you know, she's a new person apparently. I'm just jealous. I really want hair that she has. Nice hair. That's some sick hair. So I'm just saying that out of jealousy, because if I tried to dye my hair like that, it would all fall out.
Me too.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna try. Oh man. Well, but yeah, so for anyone that's listening, thank you very much. Don't forget that you can go to thechairshot.com for all your wrestling news and analysis. You can support thechairshot.com by going to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot, and you can buy yourself a soft style t-shirt. I mean, you can get a regular t-shirt if you want, but I know you're not basic because you listen to the show. You classy. You know what's up. So spend a little extra. I promise it's worth the extra money. Get yourself a soft style t-shirt. You can get Jesus Did the Job. You can get the OG Chair Shot. You can get #save tag team wrestling. You can get a Baron Corbin Sucks. Because that's still true. Then, now, forever. It's that's not changing.
Then, now, forever. That one. Should have put that on the bottom of the shirt.
Maybe a new one. That's true. ChairShot 316 is also available. You can get it in soft style. So go ahead, rep the ChairShot, support the ChairShot, so that you can continue to listen to shows like this. All of the podcasts on the ChairShot Radio Network are phenomenal. So do yourself a favor. If you don't like reading, if words are hard, if you don't got the time, just go ahead, plug in a podcast. You'll be thankful that you did. And Greg, can you remind the listeners where they can find the ChairShot on social media?
That would be at thechairshot.com. Just like the website, but without the dot, because you can't really do dots on social media.
And also on Facebook, correct? Facebook, mm-hmm. Twitter,
all
Insta,
of it.
All the things.
At least those three, because you still haven't taught me how to use Pinterest yet. So
yeah, I'm working on it, everyone. Promise. I'm working on the ChairShot Pinterest board.
Is that possible? I don't even know how.
Yes, like,
I'm so clueless that I don't even know what you're talking about right now. Like, that's how clueless I am on
the
Pinterest.
Don't tempt me, Gray.
I
will create a ChairShot Pinterest board. It probably will just be pictures of wrestlers, maybe some fun like recipes on how to like make a cobbler.
Like, would it even be related to wrestling, or would it just be completely random?
Maybe I find like a wrestler's favorite cobbler recipe.
I mean, you could kind of go with The Rock and kind of put it all under like pie or something like that. So we talked about it earlier.
Yeah, you have the pie recipes. See? You know, maybe some pictures of beer for, you know, Stone Cold. Yeah,
there you go.
You know, Halloween is coming up, So I'll just make a whole board dedicated to like Bray Wyatt themed things. Headless or like head lanterns and, you know.
As long as you fancy. Also pin things that get people to go to the website, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm okay. Fine. So we got some things. We
there's
some
plugins things that I can add to the website that will let you like click on things and somehow pin it in Pinterest. Like I know I have the capability of adding that to the website. I just don't know what anyone would do with it. I think if I understood how it worked better, I'd be more motivated to use it. But as of right now, I'm like, I don't know. That's my Pinterest knowledge in a nutshell.
Yeah. No, there's definitely more to it. But yes, you're definitely pinning things from different parts of the interweb to a board, a centralized board, or boards, because people have different, you know, boards as well, different theme boards. So you could have a theme board. Every staff members on the chair shot from the chair shot can have their own board that they can post things. You could have your own Pinterest board, Greg.
That would be probably, quite the interesting.
Oh God, I think it's only going to be like pictures of Mandy Rose and Adam Cole. Probably going to be more pictures of Adam Cole.
And Mandy, probably Mandy Rose too. Like, let's. Oh, yeah. So last week, someone listened to the show. I don't know if it was this one or the other one. And I got a message. What's your obsession with Mandy Rose, dude? I was like, of everything you listen to, you listen to probably 2.5 hours worth of podcasting, and that's the one thing you gained out of it was what's my obsession with Mandy Rose?
It's a good point, Greg. What's up with that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mandy.
Wait, that's the wrong thing to click. Hang on. Now I'm screwing everything up.
Mandy.
Okay.
I am jealous of, I haven't seen all of her videos, but you know she has a YouTube video or YouTube channel of her just eating donuts.
You know, I've heard, that's a funny, I you know, I'm not doing a very good job of living the gimmicks. I've never seen any of them, so I need to
Seek like them out. She will, and it's mainly her and Sonya, but sometimes they'll involve other wrestlers in it, but yeah, they go ahead and just test out donuts. They go to, you know, local donut shops, they get big old donuts, they test them, they eat them, you know, I guess test them, they test taste them, eat them, and she still looks the way she does. So, you know,
lots of squats, squats upon squats upon squats.
Oh man. But hey, you know what, I find it endearing. I think it's makes me like her more, just because that's an element where she, you know, you could tell she doesn't take herself seriously, but yet she still looks like a freaking supermodel. So
basically, well, that's what she was before they brought her in. So
yeah,
or actually,
yeah.
She brought herself in because she was a tough enough thing. So
yeah, so I'm just gonna crawl in a hole and cry for a little bit. Yeah, I guess that counts as our wild card topic of the week, even though I tried to finish this show probably like about 10 minutes ago. But hey, you know.
It's been like 4 minutes. Time flies when you're having
it's
fun.
It's been 5, yes. Well, if you haven't, go check out Mandy Rose's YouTube page. I don't know what the exact thing, but Mandy Rose Donuts, and you'll be able to find it. Yeah, so Greg, do your job, I guess, and just, you know, do some reviews on it. Put it on the chair shot, review some of her YouTube videos, and yeah, let the know. I mean, the world already knows what you think, but.
That could be a thing.
I guess you, that could be a thing. Anyway.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Viva la raza!
I got that passion that's lasting long. Los mujeres fall in love with that Latin charm. One woman isn't enough, amigo. Siempre corriendo más mujeres porque soy latino. And I'm tougher than tough, calling your bluff, cuz I lie, I cheat, I steal.